S from New York.
Hi, I'm Teresa, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Teresa.
First of all, it's good to be here, and what a beautiful morning, you know? Waking up, we looked out, the beach is right there. I love the beach. So thank you, Sean and Anne, for asking us down here to share on public information. I was thinking about how we met at Mahlikna and what a wonderful thing that they have, that multi-regional conference every year, because I met a lot of wonderful people there. And I've been to some really good PI workshops there. Some not so good, some better than others. You know, when I first got clean, well, first of all, I was supposed to say this, so I said, I'm from Kings Bay area, Brooklyn, New York. And when I first got clean, I was finishing up my master's. I was going to graduate school. I had two children. I had bought a house a year prior to that. And when my ex-husband and I decided to buy this house, we had made an agreement that we were going to not buy drugs anymore because we couldn't afford it. And he was able to stick to that agreement. I was not. And with all of the stress of being a working mother, going to school, I was doing more and more drugs. You know, we had kind of pulled the geographical too, because we left the location where, you know, the cop spot was across the street, and we went to a place where you had to drive maybe 15, 20 minutes to the cop spot. So that was supposed to help things too, you know. It didn't work that way either, because when I left work, I had to pass by the cop spot. So, you know, that was very convenient. And I remember leaving work, and before I'd go see my kids, I'd go up to my apartment and get high, because that was more of a priority than getting my kids after work, you know. So that's where I was at when I got clean. You know, I was fortunate, because one of the main things that we do in public information is try to get the word out, carry the message about this fellowship that's available, you know. A fellowship that's only requirement is a desire to stop using. It's open to anyone who has that desire. And I was fortunate because I have an older sister in recovery. And I remember right before I got clean, I was smoking another bong, you know, partying up, going downstairs to do the lines in the basement, coming back up. And in between all of this, I'm talking to my sister, who's clean about 2 years, and saying how I want to stop using. And she said, you know, you ever hear of Narcotics Anonymous? What a blessing that was in my life. I didn't have to go any further with my addiction, because she carried the message to me. And it was about 2 weeks after that, 12 days after that, because that was New Year's Eve, January 12th, 1990, that I called the helpline. And I got a person on the helpline, and they told me where there was a meeting. And I remember standing on my corner at the payphone, because I didn't want my daughter to hear me calling, you know, and how those feelings, I don't want to forget those feelings of like complete, utter desperation. I didn't know what the hell to do, because I had tried, that was in January, I had been trying since the April previous to that to stop using drugs. And, you know, I'd stop for like 2 weeks, start again, stop for like 30 days, start again, you know. And kept going back and back to my running buddy, who was my brother, you know. I always knew where there was drugs. I didn't have to go very far. I didn't even need any money. So, you know, I'm really grateful to the person on the other end of that phone, because they told me where there was a meeting. I made my first meeting that day, and I've been making meetings ever since, and I've been given the gift of recovery through the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. One of the things that they tell you, that we tell each other here is that, you know, we need to change people, places, and things. What was difficult for me, as far as that went, was that the people, places, and things were my family. And even though my ex-husband stopped doing drugs, other than alcohol, alcohol, which was seen in my family and his as socially acceptable, was continued. And it was a big part of our social life with both families, Irish Catholic, you know. This is what you did when you got together. You drank beer. Was just the way it was. And what happened for me is, as I spent more time clean, as I, you know, gained some clean time, I started to feel isolated within my family. I started to feel not comfortable at the Mardi Gras parties, you know, at the Christmas parties, at the New Year's parties, at the weddings. I started to feel not a part of, because everybody else was using and I wasn't. And it wasn't even just, you know, alcohol. There was other drugs still being used, because as I said before, you know, my brother was my running partner and he's still out there. So it became more and more uncomfortable, because the people, places, and things for me was my family. You know, and I had been married for 15 years. And I had two children, and then we had a child in recovery when I was clean about 2 years. It was very painful for me. And I remember one New Year's, this is leading up to my involvement in public information. I remember one New Year's Eve being down at Breezy Point, which they call Boozy Point, which is where I grew up in the summers. And everybody was drinking except my sister-in-law, who was pregnant, and my brother-in-law, who's in recovery. So there were some people there who were not, but there was like 25 other people who were. And I remember it was midnight, and I'm standing there, I got a glass and a bottle of champagne. I'm ready to go. I'm good to go, you know? And I stopped for a minute, and I said, you know what? This isn't really what I want. This isn't really going to make things better. You know, I had enough reference points to know that the feelings I was feeling of not being a part of being isolated, of being alone, abandoned in some way by my family members who were all using, wasn't going to be fixed by me drinking this bottle of champagne. And I knew also where I was going after I drank the bottle of champagne, because I knew right where to go on New Year's Eve to get cocaine. That wasn't going to be a problem. And it scared me. You know, it was a wake-up call for me. So when I shared what happened with my sponsor, she suggested that I get involved in service, because what possibly might be a solution to this feeling of being isolated and abandoned was to become more connected to people in recovery. So I went to my home group that next month, the business meeting, which I had been at before, because I had, you know, I had done the secretary there, I had done the chairperson there, but I had never done any other kind of service. I went to the home group, and I didn't even know what kind of service I was going to get involved in. And it happened that the PI rep stepped down that night. And this was back in the days when, you know what, all the commitments were filled at my home group. It's not that way anymore, unfortunately. And the PI rep stepped down, and they said, we need a new PI rep. Well, I said, well, what does that involve? And they said, oh, you just have to go to this meeting once a month. Get the information, you know, get the minutes mailed to you, come back, give us a report, what's going on in public information. So they explained a little bit to me about what public information was, how, you know, public information is the committee that deals with interfacing with the public. And it sounded good to me. You know, my background is, I'm a teacher. And speaking in front of people was something that I'm comfortable with and I enjoy, you know. So I went to this meeting, and I didn't really do much, except at this time, my area, Kings Bay area, was part of Brooklyn area. And there was like 300 meetings in Brooklyn area. I go to this meeting, there'd be like 50, 60 PI reps at this meeting. And I'd sit in the back, and I'd sign my attendance sheet, and I'd listen, and I'd go home. And I did that for about 6 months. really not getting involved because the presentations were, most of them, about 45 minutes from my home, and I had a young child. And most of them were in the evening, and it just, you know, I had two older children. And between homework and my school and their school and all of that stuff, it was easy for me to say, okay, I can't make that presentation. I had plenty of, you know, other things going on, not to have too much of a problem saying no to that. After I was doing this for about, it wasn't quite years, I think about 8 months, my home group made a decision to join a newly formed area, Kings Bay area. And I was very much against this decision because I thought, you know, the borderline was like on the corner of where my home group meets, between the service areas for the new area, Kings Bay area, and Brooklyn area. And I saw it as divisive. I saw it as not necessary because, you know, I knew had all the answers, you know. And the vote was to join this new area. So now I got to go to a new PI meeting, no longer down to the one in Brooklyn with 50, 60 members, over to this one in, I think the meeting at that time was where it is now still, at Coney Island Hospital. And it was a hospital in my neighborhood. And I went there, and there was like 6 people there. So I left that meeting. First of all, I remember Bill was the chairperson at that time of the committee. And he tells me how I came there and how angry I was and how, you know, uncooperative. And he could, you know, it was just so obvious I didn't want to be there because I wanted to just stay in my little space in Brooklyn area, nobody bothering me, doing my own little thing. And it was keeping me clean because I had to go to the business meetings and I was getting a little more connected. But as we know, there's a plan for us. You know, my higher power had a plan. And that didn't include just staying in that little space there. It included putting me in situations that were going to lead to personal growth, you know. And that's really like the main thing for me about doing service is the personal growth and the growth that in you know, dealing with other people. And you know what? That feeling of being isolated, it was a solution. I never would have known that. That was not something I had the information for, you know. And that, you know, brings us back to what a sponsor's for. Sponsors make suggestions. It's our choice whether we take those suggestions or not. If I hadn't taken that suggestion, I wouldn't have followed the road that I have followed. So I'm very grateful that I had the willingness to do that. So I went to this meeting, and then I didn't go back, I don't think, for like a couple of months because it was summertime and there was stuff going on, and I was down at Breezy Point going to the beach and hanging out with old people drinking and stuff like that. No. So I didn't go back for a couple of months, and then I went back, and they started talking about they were doing a presentation, and you had to observe 2 presentations in order to be involved in a presentation. And I started getting a little interested. You know, it sounded good. These people at the meeting were really excited about this stuff. And their enthusiasm was really attractive to me at that point. I needed something else in my life. You know, I needed something to feel good about other than what I had, you know, because we can stay where we are, but we know that doesn't really work. Or we can move in a positive direction, or we can move in a negative direction. And the part of me that was healthy and you know, that wanted to live life to its fullest wanted to continue to move in that positive direction. So there was a presentation going on at a methadone clinic, and that was the first presentation that I attended. I was supposed to be there simply as an observer. What happened was one of the people didn't show up, and all I did was really do the readings, some of the readings, and I did answer a couple of questions. And I left that presentation. I mean, to this day, I can still remember the feelings that I felt leaving that facility of, you know, that we had brought information about this fellowship that had saved my life, you know, to other people. And the questions that they asked, the fact that I was able to answer them in such a way, that we were able to answer them in such a way that made that, you know, that attraction rather than promotion. You could tell that the counselors we were speaking to, at least some of them, were feeling the attraction of Narcotics Anonymous through us. You know, we were working as vehicles for that. And hopefully, the hope is that when we do a presentation like that, that that attraction is then carried further, and that we bring sick and suffering addicts into the rooms. So after that, you know, I just got more and more involved. And that was about 10 years ago, 10 and a half years ago. And from there, I took a commitment later on as vice chair of the Kings Bay Area Public Information Committee, and then I started going to the Regional Public Information Committee because that was part of my commitment as vice chair. And started meeting like people from all the other areas, you know, Manhattan, the Bronx, Staten Island, Queens, upstate, Westchester, Open Arms. And again, now that connectedness I was feeling towards the fellowship was expanding, because I was starting to see Narcotics Anonymous not just as my home group and the groups that I attended and even my area, but as something much, much larger, you know, much more powerful. Something that's, as we know now, as I know now, is worldwide. I had no clue about that. I mean, knowing it here and knowing it here, we know that's two different things. You can know something intellectually, but to actually feel it, to actually experience it, is a whole nother ballgame. And I remember I attended, when I was 5 years clean, my first convention. And it was in the city. I'm not sure if it's the same hotel we have it at now, but it was in Manhattan, and there was like thousands of people there. And I had a place. All I had to do, if I started feeling overwhelmed by all of those people there, was go over to the PI board. And I knew somebody, you know. I didn't have to feel alone. And that's something that, you know, throughout my life, I haven't always been that good at connecting with people. There's a part of me that always felt that they're not going to like me, you know, that felt something lacking, so that it was difficult for me to connect with people. I mean, and that's, you know, drugs was a great way to handle that situation. That's what I did in high school. Connected with people, oh, let's go get high. So being clean, when I was first in recovery, and people tell me this today, I would sit in the back of the room. I would very rarely share. I had to be in a lot of pain to put my hand up. And I didn't really, you know, I had my sponsor. I had like two other people I called. That was my support group. No one else really knew me. You know, I made, you know, after the first 6 months, I made my like 3-4 meetings a week. Those people knew me, but I didn't really, you know, I had a hard time. I don't know if I want to use the word shy. I don't really think that's it. I think it was more that feeling like I wasn't able to risk, you know. I wasn't able to risk letting you know who I was, because I wasn't really still comfortable with who I was. So how am I going to risk letting you know who I was? You know, I didn't even know. And it's an amazing process when you think back. You know, that's what I like about when you celebrate anniversaries. You think back about the last year, or you think about where you were when you had this, you know, celebrated this anniversary or that anniversary, and you think back about how things have changed. Service has been such a big part of that change for me. You know, I later became the chairperson of the Greater New York Regional Public Information Committee, and that was such a wonderful commitment. I felt, you know, that self-esteem from being able to show up, you know, just show up. It's really all it is. All I had to do was show up, be open-minded, willing, and honest. That's all I had to do. And look where it's taken me. You know, we've made PI workshops all over the place. And I love it. Every place I go, I feel like this connectedness. You know, I don't know you guys really on a personal level, but I do, because we share this experience of doing public information, of doing the service. So we have that commonality that is a tie that binds us more, even deeper than just the bond of being in recovery. You know, I shouldn't say just, but it adds to that. It enhances that. It makes it even more full. Currently, I am involved in the Regional Service Committee, But the commitment that I'm involved in and I'd like to speak about is the one on the helpline. I've always wanted to do helpline service. Ever since that guy answered the phone and said, you know, it's going to be all right, and there's a meeting in 1 hour, 15 minutes from where you are. Ever since that happened, and I made that meeting, and this woman came over to me and hugged me and made me feel so welcome, and then I went back like 3 days later, and some guy shared my story, you know, and I knew then there was no doubt I was in the right place after that happened, you know. I wanted to get involved in the helpline. The helpline at the Greater New York Region has been really struggling. The helpline committee. When I became PI chair, which was back about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, of the Greater New York Region, the computer was going down all the time. People would call, the phone would just ring. There was nobody coming to answer the phones. It was a mess. It was really a mess. You know, sometimes people could leave messages and sometimes they couldn't. Sometimes they might get a person and they could get meeting information. But for the most part, the meeting information, that whole part of it was psh. So we went through this process of purchasing a computer and it all fell apart. The computer that was purchased like that six, seven years ago, was never even put online. We never even used it. And it was a lot of unmanageability, a lot of dysfunction. And since I was doing the PI thing, you know, I had enough on my plate. I really couldn't, and I was working in the evenings. I was teaching classes in the evening at that time. And, but I always had this pull, you know, just like I always have a pull to talk to anybody who's involved in public information. I had this pull towards the helpline. And those are the kind of things that I think that if we listen to in recovery, those really positive forces, because it's a positive pull. You know, you could feel the negative pulls, because we get those too, but we know the difference. You know, I do now. And when I changed jobs and stopped working in the evenings, I was finally able to go to the helpline meeting, which was on Monday night. And coincidentally, at that time, my area decided to put the helpline back in with the PI because they couldn't get anybody to chair a helpline committee. So they decided public information and helpline would be, there was a motion made, it was passed. So I took the commitment as co-chair of the PI/helpline committee. And that was back about 6 months ago. And I had to go down to the helpline now. I put myself in a position where I had to show up there because it was now a commitment. And I went there, I got orientated, started answering phones, you know, started handing out flyers in my area, trying to get people involved. And it's really difficult. You know, we always talk about in public information how difficult it is to get people to come to our committee. We did not have a functioning committee in our area for about just a few months, because then a former chairperson picked it up as acting chair until we could get someone else. And we have a functioning committee, and last month we did our first presentations in about a year. You know, and it's all former members. There's no new blood coming in. It's really hard. You know, we get new people, they show up once, and they're not sticking with it. It's hard, it's difficult for me to understand that. So right now, we got a new phone system, and it's online, and we're in the process of working out the bugs, and I have to go Tuesday to learn how to go onto the computer so I can update meeting information on it. But if you call the Greater New York Region now, you can get meeting information 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Thank God, because that was, you know, and it's still not... You know, it would be nice if you could get to speak to someone at least maybe 6, 7, 8 hours a day. We have 26 volunteers in the Greater New York Region. You know how many meetings there are in the Greater New York Region? You know how many addicts in recovery there are? 26 volunteers. It's not enough. But at least now you can get that meeting information at any time. And it's a good system. And at some point, hopefully, we'll get to the point where we'll put in a caller notification, so someone will get beeped when there's a message and it can be returned right away. But that's going to take some time. That's a process, you know. We're working on packets for people to have at home so they can turn the calls from home and have all the information necessary. You know, I remember when I was doing the PI chair of the Great New York Region, having to access our voicemail and take those phone calls off the system, and how important that was. Because if you're someone in the public and you want to get in touch with us, then you need to call the helpline, you know, and leave a message, and the Public Information Committee will then be able to set up something, or the H&I committee, or whoever they need to talk to, you know. And so the Public Information Committee and the helpline, you know, we really need to work together and be supportive of each other. And it's so hard when you have so few people, you know. But again, going into this new area of service, you know, because I have been doing PI for a long time, and I was, you know, after I finished as regional chairperson, I gave it a break for about a year, and then I took this commitment, you know, and I'm back involved, and I love PI meetings. I love talking about the traditions. I love talking about how we can carry the message. You know, I just love that whole thing. It's such a, it means a lot to me. Since this is a resource in community, I was looking at this and my boyfriend was laughing at me saying, you're not going to read from that. You don't need that. But, you know, I was looking at this, and the first thing I noticed is that the copyright is 1993, and a lot of the stuff is really outdated. It's almost 10 years old, you know. But the basics are all there. You know, this is a pamphlet to give to people in the public. This is a pamphlet to let them know who we are. And it does a good job. Of course, it has the wrong name. It doesn't even have Narcotics Anonymous World Services on the back. It has a World Service Office still. It doesn't have an email address, you know. This day and age, it'd be nice if we had a pamphlet to give people, when we do these presentations, to give out to the public with our email address on it. Which is also something that's happened in the Greater New York Region. We have, at this time, you can go online and get meeting information. But, you know, it really, this is a great pamphlet because it really has all the important stuff in it. Who we are. Talks about anonymity, talks about what a meeting's like, how NA works, you know, all the basics that people need to know if they're going to bring this to people outside who they may have contact with, who might want some help, you know. The other thing that I'm going to talk about for a couple of minutes is this World Service Bulletin. I love this World Service Bulletin. This is a great, the Public Relations and the Traditions Bulletin number 25, you know. NA cannot help addicts if they never hear of us. How are they going to hear of us? Well, if you're in a facility and H&I comes up, you know, that will happen. But how do we even get these meetings started in a facility? The facility needs to know about NA and what services we offer. And that's where the Public Information Committee comes in. And then there's other places, you know. I'm very fortunate, and I say that with quotation marks, to be working with children at risk for the last year and a half. And it's not an easy place to be because they're at risk and a lot of them, you know, they're very far from being ready to make changes. And our area PI committee came up to facility that I work at and did a presentation. This was this past month where I said we finally got back to doing presentations. One of them was where I work, and I had the pleasure of being there while they did this presentation. And I am not anonymous at my job. Kids know I'm in recovery. So one of the people doing the presentation was a sponsee of mine. And I, you know, again, that feeling, that same feeling that I had when I left the methadone clinic is the feeling that I had being there at that presentation a few weeks ago. We had 50 kids from the ages of, there might be a couple out of 14 to 18, sitting in this room, and you could hear a pin drop. And these are not your, you know, students who usually are cooperative and quiet. They asked questions, they listened, they really, it really was, the message was carried. It's the best way to express it. The message was carried. A lot of these kids are not ready. Some of them are almost there. And I've had some students who've come into the rooms, and that's like, you know, wonderful thing. But that seed was planted. You know what I mean? They know now that there are people who are doing things differently. And they saw them, and they saw the glow of those people. You know, they experienced it. So that difference between a counselor sitting there and telling them, okay, he has an AA meeting list, and maybe if you get to a meeting, that might help, that this is available. And seeing, being in the room with, and experiencing the recovery that came across from the two people doing the presentation, can't compare them. You know, you can't. And a lot of these kids are future members, I hope, you know, because there's other roads that they could take. And to me, that's like the essence of public information, that presentation, you know. And the other thing that I really love reading as far as our public relations policy is this Tradition 11, and it works how and why. Some really good stuff in here. It's one, every time I read it, you know, I haven't read it in a while, which is one of the nice things about doing a workshop like this, is it brings you to a new level with things. You know, I probably wouldn't have taken this out and read Tradition 11 if I wasn't here doing this workshop today. But it says it so well. All the stuff about the difference between attraction and promotion, you know. And it says here, it just, you get such a conflict sometimes. One of the things that it talks about in this bulletin is how one of our responsibilities is also educating the fellowship, you know, or keeping, how does it word, keeping the fellowship open to learning about Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I remember one time when we were doing service at the Greater New York Region at the convention. It was when it was upstate in the Concord, I believe, and we had the I can't even remember the name of it, the video, Just for Today, the Just for Today video playing, and then we had the loop playing of the public service announcements. And some guy from our area came up, and he was really irate. He was really upset. How could you have NA on TV? This is against our traditions. You're breaking traditions here. What's going on? And this was a guy who had a few years clean, you know, he wasn't brand new to recovery. And what came out of that is we went to his home group and we did this presentation, a public information presentation, and we talked about the difference between attraction and promotion, and we let them know that's what the Public Information Committee does. And the difference between Narcotics Anonymous and individuals in Narcotics Anonymous, as far as anonymity goes. Because very often people don't even hear that part of the tradition, you know? They just focus in on that we're not supposed to be on TV or in the news or in any movies, period. And they think that means Narcotics Anonymous should never be mentioned on TV or in the news or in the movies. We're not an anonymous program. You know, we don't want to be an anonymous program. We want everyone to know about Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, so that if they need us, they know where to find us, you know. I remember early on in my PI training, one of the things that was stated to me was, you know, we want NA to be a household name. So if someone says, I have a drug problem, someone else will say to them, go to NA. Very simple, you know. And when we went to this group, and did this presentation. It was to a lot of people who had been around for a long time and had never heard any of this. And they didn't, you know, they didn't really hear that whole thing. You know, sometimes personal anonymity is broken on the level of press, radio, and film. And that's unfortunate. But when they did an article, when we had the convention the first time in my experience that it was held in New York City, and they had this headline, 10,000 addicts clean in New York City, and they had a picture of keychains, and they had this whole article about the convention and the meeting in the Javits Center and what was going on. And when that was in, I think it was the Post, and when we saw that in the paper, that was like awesome, you know? That was amazing. I think that the last thing I'd like to talk about is the changing perceptions of the public as far as Narcotics Anonymous goes. I see a change, and it is a positive one, and that's one thing that our literature talks about, how important it is that we have a positive image in the community. When we talk about public information, we know that when somebody's wearing a PI shirt, I mean an NA shirt, or has a sticker on their car, or is hanging out outside an NA meeting, that they're exposing the public, they're exposing the fellowship to the public. You know, they're involved in that. They're doing PI, all right? And I remember when we first went, that first presentation that I did, that there was some negative, comments made about Narcotics Anonymous, about people not staying clean, you know, people use it in the meetings, stuff like that. And that we've all heard them if we've been doing public information or if just being a member of the fellowship. We've all heard those comments if you've been coming around, you know. And I'm hearing them less often. I'm hearing more positive. And I'm seeing more of the inclusion of 12-step programs in general, but specifically Narcotics Anonymous, in the recovery, what's the word I'm looking for? In the profession. And that's a wonderful thing. And that's really due to our efforts. You know, so I mean, everybody give a pat on the back for that. Because that's really where it came from. When we went up to that methadone clinic and did that presentation, there was a different concept of Narcotics Anonymous presented to those counselors that they had never been exposed to before. When the students at this presentation I was talking about a few minutes ago saw those people in recovery for multiple years and heard their stories, you know, there was a different concept of Narcotics Anonymous presented to them. And I think there's a direct relationship between this and the fact that I'm seeing a lot more younger people in the meetings. I went to my home group last week, and there was like four people under 18 there. You know? That's awesome to me, that you could be under 18 and be coming to an NA meeting. I was 31 when I got clean, and I'm very grateful that I didn't have to stay out there any longer. But these younger people today having this opportunity to get clean, 18, 17, 16, 19, 25, that's like awesome. And, you know, I woke up this morning, I'm just going to go back to that, and I just was feeling very grateful. Grateful to be alive, grateful to look out my window and see the ocean. It's a beautiful day, you know, and grateful to be in recovery. Because yeah, all of that, I wouldn't be here. I probably would not have been awake at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, you know, if I was out there. God knows what would have happened. Because I don't, and I don't want to, you know. My life today is really good. I'm no longer that person sitting in the back of the meeting who feels uncomfortable putting my hand up, you know. I'm also able very often now to go to a meeting and listen, and because my life has gotten really manageable, and I don't have all of that turmoil in here all of the time. You know, in fact, I have it very rarely. And when I do get it, it's short. You know, it passes quickly. Because life is not easy. Life on life's terms is not something that is always wonderful, you know. Everything's always going smoothly and no problems and no stress. The stress level that we experience in recovery in today's world is really high. You know, I do have 3 children, and I do work. Fortunately, I'm not going to school anymore. Anne was sharing about her going to school, and I was thinking, well, I'm glad I'm not having to deal with that today. Things come up in your life that are not so easy to deal with. Some days I think, like I remember one day this week, I was thinking all the stuff I have to do the next day. I had, you know, get my daughters to school, go to work. I had parent-teacher conferences that night. I was supposed to go to the hospital and visit my father-in-law. I, you know, had all of this stuff going on, and I was feeling tired the night before, and I'm thinking, oh, tomorrow's going to be a really rough day. I got up the next morning, kids got off to school, went to work, parents came, spoke to the parents, went really smoothly, ended up not going to the hospital to visit my father-in-law. Instead, I had to take my daughter to the doctor because she wasn't feeling well. You know, it was just like I had in my head that, oh, tomorrow's going to be a difficult day, and it ended up not being so difficult. And that's one of the reference points I always have to remember. Sometimes, very often, things are much more difficult up here than they are in reality. And just doing the next thing you got to do. And then I was thinking about driving down here. Oh, we got to take a 6-hour drive down to this convention, and then I'm going to have to get up early in the morning, and I'm going to be tired still. And I got in the car, and I was just, this is great. I'm going away for the weekend. No kids, you know, down to the beach. What could be better? So it's all in your perspective. It's all in your attitude. You know, it's all in my attitude and my perspective. I can turn things around in a minute. I can become negative in a minute, and I can become positive in a minute. It's what I choose. And how did I get to this point? Well, I shared it in the beginning, and I'm just going to go back to that, that I came this close to relapsing when I had 2 years clean. This close. And I got involved in service. Now I have 12 and a half years clean, you know. And I'm really grateful. And I would like to thank everybody who's here for being here. You know, I'd like to thank everybody who's done work on this convention for doing that work. Because it's service, you know. And it only happens, these things only happen if people show up. And I'm hoping that in the future with Narcotics Anonymous we can get more people to show up. Because we're having a problem with that in our area and in our region as far as getting more people involved in service, you know. And you see some people who've been doing it for years and getting burnt out, you know. So thank you. I'm Teresa, I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share. Going to open the meeting up?
Hi, my name's Ann. I'm an addict.
Hi.
I'd like to thank Teresa for coming out. That was really great. I appreciate that. And I was glad you mentioned PI booths at your other conventions. And I'm really glad that we have the PI booth that we've got here today. And just a couple experiences I've had just since yesterday. I put together this... I call it the PI mail-out sample. I thought this would be good. One time we had a learning day in our area and stuff like that, and people didn't know, and I thought it would be really good to have something today to show people. And basically, it's real simple. It just gives them a sample of a letter that we send out in the mail, the IPs that I send out, one of our helpline flyers, and a meeting list. And I thought, well, it's kind of silly because most people in PI know about that kind of stuff. And I thought, well, what the heck? You know, I mean, I've got this stuff at home. Might as well put it together. And sure enough, I had a guy. I was hoping he'd be here today. His name's Kevin, and he's from New York. And he ate this up. He's like, wow. And he had all kinds of questions. He's a new PI chair, and he didn't really know what he's going to be doing and all that other stuff. And he was like, oh, you know, can you send me a copy of that letter in the mail, you know, and we got exchanged email and stuff like that. So that was just, like, really neat. And Then we had a guy, and I felt really sorry for him. He was an older guy with a ponytail, a lot of white and gray in his hair. And he came by the booth, and he was looking, and I got to talking to him, and he said that he was from another region, and that he had initially wanted to get involved in PI, and the PI chair of that region or area or whatever was a young guy, and they were doing presentations in high schools. And the guy said, sorry, but you really look kind of too old to be doing that. And it just blew this guy right off. He said that was 3 years ago. He never got involved in PI. And I told him that he should go back because he said he really had an interest in doing it. And I told him, he said, well, I work at night and all. I said, well, that's really great because when we do a lot of NA booths in places, it's usually during the day. And you need those kinds of people. And I told him it'd be really good for him to get involved, and he really seemed interested. So just from today, that was something that, or from yesterday, that really made me feel like it was worth it. Because sometimes I wonder, what's this really going to do? You know, the outcome, you know, whatever. But every time I do something, some PI-related activity, something good happens. And one of the things that I really liked hearing this year, I got this from a guy a couple months ago. If you've been to the booth or you've been involved in NA, there are those little drug problem cards. And we stamp our regional helpline number on it. And this guy, he sat in on the PI meeting, and I showed him all the stuff that we had in PI and showed him the little drug problem cards. And he goes, oh, I've got one of those. I looked down and I said, really? Where'd you get it from? He goes, well, I was at this concert, HF Festival, 2 years ago when I was 14. He said, I saw the word narcotics on this banner. And I got running up to it, you know, free samples or something, who knows. But he said, somebody shoved this card in my hand. He said, I didn't know what to do with it. I stuck it in my pocket. He said, I still got that card today. 2 years, he wasn't ready then, but like you said, the seed was planted, and when he got in trouble and when he came to hopefully the end of his road, he knew where to come. And like you, it was like really neat. I like seeing young kids at the meetings, and to find out that somehow or another we were involved in this guy's recovery was really, really cool. So in doing the PI stuff, just like I said, every time we had a booth at Montgomery College in my area. We had two of them over the course of a couple months, and at this one, this real cocky guy. My thing is when I'm at an NA booth, what I do is somebody's walking by, a lot of times they don't want to come up to the booth because it's Narcotics Anonymous, but if I even catch their eye, hi, how you doing? You know, I see their eye and I reel them in, you know, because they see, oh, Narcotics Anonymous, ah. You know, I say, hey, how you doing? It was this jock-looking, cocky guy. Him and his buddy had matching shirts on for something that they were into. And you could tell he was, like, real self-assured, just one of them guys you want to smack. But anyways, I said, how you doing? And he's like, fine. And they thought it was a joke, coming up and talking to me about NA. You could see they were just, like, playing and everything. And I gave him the IP, Am I an Addict? And I said, well, if you or anybody you know, because he said he did drugs and it was a lot of fun. But anyways, he came back later, and he didn't look so happy. He came back by himself. And he said, are mushrooms a drug? I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, man, like that. I was like, uh-huh. But anyways, but it was neat, though, because if I hadn't have made eye contact with that guy, he'd have never known, you know. He'd never known about NA, and he took a meeting list when he left. And I just thought that was really awesome. But we do have a few minutes left, and I'd appreciate it if people who are involved in PI would want to come up for a few minutes if you're interested and talk about PI in your area or region. Anybody? Anybody? Come on, Bill.
Hi, I'm Bill. I'm an addict. And I'm also from the Greater New York Region and Regional PI Committee. I'd like to thank Teresa for a really comprehensive PI presentation here. I'm thinking, what the heck else could I say after that? Everything was really covered so well, and I'd like to thank Anne and Sean for your dedication, really, to PI. All the wonderful things I see up here really gives me a lot of encouragement and enthusiasm. The only thing I'd like to share is one experience we had in our area in Brooklyn. One time there was an incident in one of our groups where after the meeting was over, some members had a problem involving, you know, a third party, and it broke out into a fight, and two of our members ended up getting stabbed and ended up in the hospital. And sure enough, the next day it came out in the police blotter, anonymous attack, you know, that two men, you know, in their 20s were stabbed at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and it gave the location and so forth. And it was right in our area, so, you know, the PI committee, at first, because we didn't know what to do, the group didn't know what to do, we contacted some of the group members, and it turns out our PI secretary was a member of that group. So we decided, you know, to phone, you know, contact the next day with each other that they should go to the church. The first thing to do is try not to lose the meeting to see what's going to happen with the facility there. And which was done, and the facility understood. They weren't happy about it, but they understood, and we weren't going to lose a meeting, so that was great. And it happened that our PI committee was meeting that weekend also, so we asked, you know, the group members not to take any action, not to start writing letters to the paper. You know, one of the factors was that the paper said it happened at the meeting, but it didn't happen at the meeting. It happened in the parking lot after the meeting, and is that really a difference? You know, it's still our members, and it happened, you know, within our meeting, just happened after the meeting. So we had the PI committee, and we were throwing around different ideas, and, you know, one idea was we should write a letter to the paper explaining that it didn't happen at the meeting, and, you know, that there didn't seem like a good idea. And another idea was not to even concentrate on it at all, because we had our regional convention coming up, you know, at the Hilton Hotel in Manhattan, and it's a beautiful thing, and we've had public service announcements in the papers and stories about our conventions before, so to let the public know about something good instead of concentrating on that. And that idea was brought forth with, yeah, but people are going to remember from the week before, and they're going to say, yeah, that's the place where those people got stabbed last week, and we continue the talk about, you know, the negativity. So what our group conscience was that day was that we weren't going to take any action at all. That we didn't lose the meeting. It was a wonderful thing that the meeting wasn't lost. You know, we can do our best to visit the members who were in the hospital. And a plan was that, you know, there were members that saw this kind of thing, that, you know, that was going to erupt, and nobody really said anything. So the idea was that we should try to help each other. You know, when we see members who are uncomfortable, when we see members who are having trouble, with other members to try and step in there and intervene before a matter like this happens, you know. So the idea was to help each other and not take any more action with the newspapers or with public service announcements or anything, to just let the thing die in normal course of anything else. You know, this kind of thing could happen anywhere, at a bingo parlor, it could happen anywhere, and to just let it go like that. And for me, what happened with that is it was a big relief that it was over, that we didn't have to take any action, that we didn't have to worry, we didn't have to live in any fear, that everything was the way it was supposed to be again. And we can continue working on our PI efforts the same way we were before this incident went. And we learned something, hopefully learned a new way to help each other, you know, when we see members who are struggling. And, you know, so I just wanted to bring that up because of how the group conscience helped me, although I thought we should have done something about it. You know, the obsession was lifted thanks to the group conscience and the PI members, and thanks to doing service, you know, being involved in service. And it's great to be here being involved in service also. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hello, I'm Greg. I'm an addict.
Hey, Greg.
And I wanted to show up to support the PII subcommittee and the workshop here. I've been involved with PII, and a lot of times I measure myself as being in kindergarten or pre-K when I compare my service to others who do service in PII, because there's so much to be done, and sometimes it's difficult to get it all done. But it's great hearing everybody. It's great hearing your experience from New York, and I'll just share some of my stuff that I've learned in PII. Of course, one of the first things I heard, it was a power of attraction to me too, and it was worked out just like you were sharing. Not the service helped me, didn't necessarily keep me clean, but helped me stay around. And when I first came around, there were some people doing PII work in my area, Tri-County, Southern Maryland area, and I was attracted to that. I was attracted to them, and I wanted what they had. And that's what got me involved at first, you know, with it. And it's been that way ever since. I'm still have a lot of respect for the people who do service in here, not just PII, but any service in this fellowship. And it's a big service. Doing service to some degree is a big part of my story of my time in Narcotics Anonymous and my time being able to stay clean in Narcotics Anonymous and grow in Narcotics Anonymous at a lot of different levels, at a regional level, at an area level, and even at a group level doing service. So it's big, and I really try to encourage, you know, if you're sponsoring people and you're sponsoring them right, they're in service, you know. And I look at the guys I sponsor, and I'm real happy to see most of them are at area service in my area doing something, you know. And that's the way it was given to me from my sponsors, and that's the way I try to pass it on. And I think that's how we get new people in here. It's so difficult, the same faces. And the other thing I learned early on with public information was they told me we were about delayed gratification. If you want instant gratification, get down the hallway to the H&I meeting. But if you want to experience a little bit of delayed gratification, which is a very foreign concept to addicts, you can look in this room and see how many addicts are in here, and you'll understand. But delayed gratification is a very foreign concept to us addicts, and how it worked for me and PI is like this. We worked hard. We got our meeting schedules for our area in the newspaper. We distributed meeting schedules to the basic places like methadone clinics, rehabs, health departments, and it would be months, and then somebody would come into meeting them. And they'd get up and share and say, you know how I discovered Narcotics Anonymous? I read about it in the local paper. Or you know how I got to Narcotics Anonymous? I was referred to Narcotics Anonymous through the methadone clinic. And that's when, bing, the light goes on. And you say, man, you really feel good. It's what you're sharing about, feeling really good inside that, hey, you know, sometimes I wonder if what I'm doing is really working or really helping. And that's the times I've felt the best. To see that the message we're getting out there does help, and people are coming to our fellowship and learning about our fellowship from that. So I encourage anybody who's thinking about PI or in PI to hang with it, because we really do have a big impact. And the thing is, it's frustrating because sometimes we just don't get that instant gratification and see it. Other thing is, in our area, we've combined phone line and PI also. We've really haven't had active phone line committee for years, and so it's combined, and we really rely on the region. The region has a 1-800 number. It's so great now, very similar to what you were sharing about in your area. Call, get meeting schedules, and then the biggest thing we do on a PI level for phone line in our area is we assign a pager to someone, and if an addict needs to talk to a person directly, they hit one certain button in that menu, and they leave a message. And Page's addict is carrying a pager, and they call him back. Otherwise, you can just go through the menu and get any meetings. And probably the biggest challenge with that is keeping the meetings accurate on there. And I know we have some inaccuracies there. We need to be able to report those at a regional level in a proper time frame to get them updated. But that's what we're doing for phone lines. So the biggest thing we do is have some dedicated addicts who are willing to carry the pager and respond to calls that come through with requests. And a lot of other calls, I know Sean behind the scenes for a long time has been working, put together packages. A lot of people call and will just want information about Narcotics Anonymous mailed out to them, and I know he's done a big job with that in the past, sending out just packages of information from different requests from people, whether organizations or individuals, and that's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes of PI that people don't see. So much of it is just that sort of work that that really keep our fellowship alive and keep the information out there. And I'm gonna sit down. We aren't a secret fellowship, and I heard this once, and it really rang a bell, especially with PI work. You know, some people come up to you and say, "Can you do that? Can you do that? You shouldn't do that. We can't do that. We might get in trouble." You know, and you gotta say, look, we're not a secret fellowship. We don't want to be a secret fellowship. This is an anonymous program, and this personal anonymity is what we're talking about with public information. Personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. But we aren't an anonymous fellowship, as you said, and we aren't trying to be a secret fellowship. We're trying to get the information out there in the right way to let people know we exist, and it's the best thing we can do. And again, when I see the work others do, I feel I fall way short in the service I do in PI. But it has been one of my biggest areas of service I've been able to help support to some degree. And I've kind of come in, did some for a couple years. Right now, I'm taking a break from it. I did it for a couple of years at RA, and we have a new chair, and I'm trying to support the subcommittee, but I'm not really involved in going to regional level anymore. But I've done it, it kind of comes and goes that way with my life and with service, and it's usually PI draws me back, that attraction again. Thanks for letting me share.